This is tape two, site B now. What was a typical day like for you in the Dove Lab? When would you usually go in? How would you sort of set up and structure your day?
So the day would start in the Dove Lab between 8 and 9. And in the summer, we would walk or bike to the lab, and it was a very nice thing because the student housing in which we lived was about a 15-minute bike ride along a very nice lake. So that was a nice start of the morning. And in the lab, I am a very organized person. So this, you know, organized common sense, to some extent, it's true. I like to do several things at the time. I always already did. And I had these different projects that I told you about. And some of these things I would do on my own. Some of these things I would have collaborative projects with some other people in the lab. So always there would be two or three experiments going on any given day. And I would then have pretty good plan of the day, what I need to do in the morning, what I need to do in the afternoon, and they are always some little things that you can do at any time of a day when you find a moment of time. And then in free moments, we would, of course, we would be reading. The lab was organized in a sense that there was a lab component where we had benches, and that's all the experiments were happening there. And then there was office components when all the postdocs and students were in. And my colleague on the left was a British postdoc, and we had our tea club.
Right.
So in the afternoon, there would be a tea that Europeans would be drinking, and there would be some political and not only discussions. Another thing I remember, besides just doing science in this organized manner of, you know, culturing and isolating and doing stainings and going to a microscope to have images, I also remember that at 4 p.m. in Wisconsin, there would be a national public radio always on, and we would be listening to the news.
Right.
Bill would always bring New York Times, or we would actually even together somehow have a subscription to New York Times, and I'm laughing that New York Times and my husband are my only continuity in my life. Since then, I would always have a subscription of New York Times, either in Boston or here as
right.
well. So New York Times was always read. And at the time, 1986 and then 1989, practically every day there would be something about Poland.
Mm-hmm.
So that was important because things were happening in Poland, and now, you know, like once per month there's something about Poland,
right, you're right.
Which is, you know, in a way good news. But so that was the life in the lab. The lab was extremely friendly. We had they've been very welcoming and very supportive of me throughout these years. I have to say that was a very positive experience, from very simple things like, you know, of course, birthdays and so on. But when we got married with my husband, they had a big party for us in one of the parks. And of course, they were presents, and they would be present we had a little reception after our wedding. Our wedding was unusual in a sense that our family was not with us. I mean, they could not travel at the time. It was just too expensive. But our friends were with us, so that was nice. But we were talking about the lab, so I'm backtracking. So what I was stressing, however, that there was a lot of discussion in the lab and also outside of the lab, and a lot of meetings and parties and just trips together, bike trips or canoe trips, not only in my lab, but also in the lab of my husband's. So that was a very friendly environment in which the science was combined with social and also some culture, because there were some movie festivals that we were going to and you know, things like that.
Right, right. All right. I know, you know, this is mostly about science and your work, and we've taken, I think, little digressions here and there, but I think that's entirely acceptable given, you know, the importance of 1989 and what happened then. What was your response to those events and what was happening in Poland?
that was initially that was stressful time, even though actually in Poland from the very beginning it was obvious that it's going to happen almost peacefully, and that's probably something that I'm very proud of Europeans that it happened this way. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was later so much shocked by what happened in Yugoslavia when things started to deteriorate there. But I'm amazed still what happened in Europe at the time, starting with Poland and then, you know, the progression of through Czechoslovakia and then through Romania, and mm-hmm. still relatively very, very peaceful transition from a system that one would, if you look back in time, the system seemed so pervasive and so strong that later just collapsed like a house of cards, almost, one would think. I mean, yes, the Poland, the martial law, that was this, it seemed like that was the last strong reaction that mm-hmm. the communism could yield, and later it just collapsed.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if, I don't know about you, but it seems as if we're still trying to absorb that. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if it's hard to believe it happened.
Yes, on the other hand, if you go to Poland, it's actually amazing that it's almost completely forgotten.
Really?
Yeah. It's the reality, I mean, the reality of everyday life in Poland is now too absorbing for Poles to appreciate what actually happened and to appreciate how, for the better, the life has changed.
Right.
Because there's many aspects many aspects of life which are difficult, and there are many people who long for the socialistic times.
Right.
And you know, we were talking already about that, about how predictable my life would be in Poland. It would be very predictable in a sense that, yes, I would be working at university, I would be doing, I would be struggling with doing science, I would be not rich, not hungry, however, I would have some medical care. It would be just a very predictable life in which you know that your potential as a person would never be fulfilled, and you will be always wondering what this potential was.
Right.
But on the other hand, this is a very secure life if you think about it. It's, everything is predictable, but nothing really bad is going to happen to you unless, of course, you get sick or something like that. So there was also enormous security of that system of mm-hmm. everybody having a job, really very few people on the street, and so on and so forth. So that's a transition now when people struggle with becoming a capitalistic country, and it's difficult for people to accept that there are so many hungry people, that there are so many poor people.
Right.
Some of these numbers existed, but they were sort of hidden. Now they are, you know, they are out in the open, and so yeah, the 1989. I mean, that's such an ancient history in Poland.
It really is. Now, how soon after the fall did you return to Poland and actually get to
work
around?
I was actually there in 1989, I believe.
Oh, really?
I was there in 1988. That was my first trip. And then almost every year or every other year I would be going. And then, indeed, every time I would go after the collapse of the system, it would be a different country. It was enough to step down from the plane at the Warsaw airport, and you would already see some changes happening. So I can just give you a taste of it. I mean, one, the first few visits was just huge inflation. You know,
right.
It's like 10 times more. Money would be losing value, and I mean, I would be completely confused how much everything works every time I would go to Poland. And now this is one of the achievements, that the zloty became very, very stable in the last several years. But I'm looking forward to euro in a few years in mm-hmm. Poland as well. But then there would be these transitions. Initially, there was a huge explosion of people just doing small business and just trying to sell things. They would go to Western Europe or actually to India. They would bring stuff and they would be selling. Everybody was selling something and buying something. And mm-hmm. that was like the first wave of capitalism in Poland and private mm-hmm. And private enterprise. So that was like the first visit. It was completely impressed by this number of people who are selling and buying and on the street and everywhere. Then I remember another visit where the selling and buying became more organized. There was a lot of little shops, less buying and selling on the street. Of course, the shops were then filled with goods from the West, and then everybody would be watching videos, because that was like a completely new Poland. So transitions like that. I mean, I can tell you that not the last trip, but the penultimate trip a few years ago, I remember coming on the Warsaw airport. We arrived and in the luggage, everybody took their cell phones out and everybody was talking on their cell phones. Like, okay, that's another phase of Poland.
Exactly. Oh yeah, it had to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to the chronology here. The chronology has you sort of finishing up then at Madison. Now, is it before we move on to the Drever? Is that his?
Yes,
Drever Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you want to say more about the Madison experience?
Besides that, it was such a positive experience.
Right.
Yeah, one thing I can mention, that one thing I've done with Bill Duff, besides just the research in the lab, Bill was teaching a course every couple of years on developmental genetics. And I took this course first as a student, and then he suggested me being a teaching assistant in that course.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very interesting combination, because it was one of the best courses I ever took, very intense from Bill's perspective. But the idea was to survey developmental system from phages to human, actually, and discuss a bunch of papers, and he would ask very, very good questions about these papers, and there would be a discussion about these papers. He organized it very well. So my role as a TA was actually to provide an introduction to every of these systems that we would be covering. And I took that very seriously, and I spent this entire semester when I was doing that. I would spend a lot of time on studying every one of these systems. And in a way, that was at the time when I was deciding what I want to do in the future. I told you that I was interested in genetics and development, but my initial love was fruit fly, Drosophila, and the studies I read about. But as I was in Madison and I was reading and science was developing, I became fascinated by the studies in the frog on gastrulation. This is this process when the embryo is taking shape. There's a very dynamic process of a lot of cell movement. So I was became fascinated by this. And I knew I wanted to do this, but I wanted to do it with genetic methods. And then in frog, you cannot do that. So it looked that the mouse was an obvious, in the mouse you can do genetics, that was an obvious choice, and Bill was doing genetics in the mouse. So I was going to the mouse rooms and actually watching how experiments are being done. But just at the same time, some papers, very few papers, started to be published about zebrafish. And Bill Duff is one of these biologists who started with lambda phage, and another scientist who did that was George Streisinger, and that was the founding father of the zebrafish research.
Mm-hmm.
So George Streisinger also started as a phage geneticist and then chose zebrafish as a potential model system for study nervous system development. He died early in life, but he founded this research in Eugene, Oregon, and then there was already a group of people who continued these studies. And the system started to draw some attention. So I was reading about this system. I was curious about this system. And Bill very much encouraged that, actually. He liked the idea of zebrafish as a model system. He encouraged me to read about it. And then during this course that we've been teaching together, as I was reading about every system and then lecturing about every one of these systems, we played a little game with the students. What are the pros and what are the cons of every one of these model systems mm-hmm. to do developmental biology? And I don't know if I convinced the students, but I convinced myself in the process that the zebrafish is what I wanted to do.
Right.
And the main reason being that the embryos are transparent, they develop outside of the mother, so you can actually watch with a camera or time-lapse, you can document this developmental progression and as this dynamic process of gastrulation is studying, and you can use genetics at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And how about teaching? Obviously, doing this course, it leads you to your next step in, mm-hmm. in terms of research. But had you done much teaching before?
Not really. I mean, except being involved in these different scientific circles in
right.
Poland. So,
the retreats,
and we've
yeah.
been actually what they didn't teach us too much to write in Poland in terms of scientific writing, except of writing my master thesis. They do a much better job here in teaching to write, but they taught us to talk about science. So that was always easy to me. I mm-hmm. gave a lot of seminars in Poland, and I thought that would be something that I would like to do. And definitely this experience of TAing with Bill, this course was also a positive experience. So I knew I can do that, and I like mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to throw in, if it's all right, one more question.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know that you're going to move in the direction of zebrafish, mm-hmm. I assume. Mm-hmm. Then how did you decide then to go to Drever's lab?
That was, you see, also Bildav's influence. we knew that Janinus Lein-Volhard, who is the same person that I read the paper about Drosophila development, that she also started to work on zebrafish. And one of her previous students, Wolfgang Drever, was also doing that, and that he would be moving to U.S. And Bill learned this when he met Yanni at some meeting at France. And mm-hmm. He came back and he told me, Lila, Wolfgang Drever will be moving to U.S. and setting his own lab, working on zebrafish, doing genetic screens. So then I wrote to Wolfgang, even before he came to U.S., mm-hmm. that I would be interested maybe meeting with him and talking about joining his lab. And he responded positively, which after he already had a position at Mass General Hospital in Boston, but he was not there. He spent some time in Eugene, Oregon, which is the mecca of
right.
the zebrafish, the cradle of the zebrafish, if you will. And he was there, and this is where I visited him. This is when I saw the zebrafish embryo for the first time. I've seen the fish, but I saw the embryo for the first time. And maybe I'll show you sometime tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
And once I saw the embryo...
You're sold.
I was absolutely sold. Yeah.
That's great, mm-hmm. yeah. Okay, well, why don't we end it there on mm-hmm. that note?